Welcome to today's Inspiring Women with your host, Deanne DeMarco. On today's program, you'll meet the next business and entrepreneurial rising star. You'll learn from their successes, challenges, and life lessons to find out what has made them recognized in their fields. Now, here is your host, Deanne DeMarco.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women. I'm your host, Deanne DeMarco. And if you are ready to be empowered and ready to take the next steps to be more equipped for success, then stay tuned. We have got a dynamite show for you today. We are going to be talking about some of the lessons from that hit TV series, the Shark Tank, with one of the entrepreneurs that has made it big. And we're also going to be talking about authentic self-promotion. Today's show is sponsored by the UPS Store. From printing and mailbox solutions to packaging and shipping, the UPS Store is your helpful neighborhood small business resource center. And I love the UPS Store. I use them all the time. Well, I can't wait to introduce you to our first guest. Our first guest is, some of you may know her as Daisy Cakes, that was on Shark Tank. But Kim Nelson was born to cook. She was taught at an early age by both her grandmothers and her great aunt, Daisy, for whom she named her company after. And she's a graduate of Woodford College. And Daisy, Kim has been in the food business for over 30 years. Daisy Cakes actually began in 2009. Kim wanted to share her family cake recipes with a much larger customer base. And so she and her mother actually individually hand-sifted, baked, and frosted each of their four-layer cakes. Kim and her Daisy Cakes were cast on the ABC hit show Shark Tank that aired in April of 2011. Since then, her business has just skyrocketed. Along with her help of her business partner, which is Barbara Corcoran, many opportunities have come her way. She's been on the Nate Burka Show, Anderson Cooper, ABC World News, Today's Show, the QVC, and her cakes, or Daisy Cakes, have even been a featured prize on The Price is Right and Wheel of Fortune. And she's got a new cookbook coming out, too, where I'll talk to her about that. Well, Kim, welcome to today's Inspiring Women.
Thank you so much for having me, Deanne. I appreciate it. Looking forward to talking with you today.
You know, I actually saw you on that TV show on Shark Tank. And I'm sitting there going, man, we'll have to get one of those cakes one of these days.
Yeah, and you got one coming sooner than you think.
I'm so excited. But, you know, you just did such a great job with that show. So before we get into what happened in the show and some of the lessons learned, tell us a little bit about how you actually got started.
Well, honestly, I really did, like so many of us in the food business today, with my grandmothers, and for me, my great aunt also, who lived with one of my grandmothers. And I mean, I can remember itty bitty little girl climbing up on my little yellow stool and helping my grandmother roll dough for the biscuits, or stand by the stove and stir the gravy. Or I just, you know, it's just kind of like what we do. We are family. We're a big family who likes to, you know, cook and eat. And so I grew up with that love of, you know, really good food right there in the farm their houses. And then I went off to college, and one of my best friends in college, she's Greek, and we started a catering business together. And after that, I had a few restaurants, a few children, started a cooking mm-hmm. school where I taught some really good friends of mine, and just people in the town, they would come to my cooking classes. And then after that, with all this craziness in the food business that my mother and I have been involved in, we kind of decided to refine it a little bit and started just to actually go back to what we had done the first time ever. We sold a cake in 1972, a chocolate cake with yellow layers, but kind of refined it, went back to what we'd done at the beginning, and started selling our cakes and shipping them nationwide.
Wow. You know, so how did that actually come about, where you got on the Shark Tank?
Well, I was on season 2 originally, and I had a friend who called me. We'd gone to school together, high school and college, and he called me and told me there was this new show on and that he thought I should try to get my cakes on it. And this was in June of 2010. And I'd had my cake business with my mom for a year. We started in June of 2009. So, honestly, as soon as I hung up the phone from him, I went to abc.com, Shark Tank Casting, and I uploaded my name, my age, my website, a product description, and a picture. And the casting coordinator called me the very next day to talk to me about the possibility of applying to be on the show. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was a very long process. It was the better part of the summer, and then because that was in June, and then in Labor Day weekend is when I got the email to send in the 27-page application and a video to be on the show.
A 27-page application.
So she had plenty of cakes to, you know, convince her that I was her gal to, you know, to pick me to be on the show.
You know, so you sent in a 27-page application.
Yes.
Wow.
After a lot of vetting to be deemed worthy, you know, to even apply to be on the show before, you know, you actually go out there to pitch, there's a lot to do.
So what was it that you thought that you had done that Barbara picked you to make you a deal?
Well, I mean, not to sound boastful, but she liked me from the beginning. And when I walked in and you're standing there for what seems like an eternity in dead silence, you know, she would look at me and smile, and she'd look at the cakes, and then she'd look back at me and smile. And I don't know. Before I walked in, as I was walking down that long hallway, I could hear her laughing. And that really put my mind at ease. So I feel like, you know, right when the doors open and I'm headed her way, I kind of made a connection with her, and she made me feel very at ease. But, you know, the thing with Barbara was that she saw all those men who are very fit and probably don't eat a lot of cake. She saw them eating that cake and putting it down and picking it back up and eating some more, and they all, you know, decided they were out concerning my business, but then they kept eating the cake. And I think that convinced her, too, besides the fact that she just, you know, she liked me and my story, that, you know, I was a good fit for someone for her to invest in their business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember when I saw it, I know they do a lot of editing for the show, but they all loved your cakes.
They really did. They really did. And you know, they have the personality. I mean, they're not there just to say things. You know, if they don't mean it, they're not going to say it, because they can certainly be, you know, pretty rough with some people. But they were all very, very kind to me. And I think the fact that my cake was good, it was delicious, they loved it. They said it's some of the best cake they'd ever tasted. You know, I think that convinced Barbara, too, that, you know, I was a good risk.
To make the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what are some of the lessons that you've learned in working with Barbara?
Oh, boy. You know, nothing is easy, is it? I mean, anything, you know, anything worth doing, it takes a whole lot of hard work. And I've learned, you know, that you have really good days, you know, where things are awesome, and then doggone it, then something comes up that takes the wind out of your sails, and then, you know, with more good things. But we've had some, you know, rough and tumble times. We've hit more than a few bumps in the road, as you might want to say. And for us, and for me, because it's the cloth I'm cut from, I'm just persistent. I'm not a quitter. I don't give up. I don't take no for an answer. And I think that really, you know, has helped me in my business to, you know, turn the corner, which is what we did back in about Thanksgiving of last year. We really did turn the corner, and I think we're headed in an awesome direction right now. And, you know, we can just keep, we have quite a few people along the way who wanted to have their hand in the cookie jar, so to speak. And, you know, it's just nobody's going to run your business the way you're going to run your business. Nobody's going to run Daisy Cakes the way my mother and I are going to run it, which is our way that is the right way. And with Barbara's help and guidance, we really have made it a very successful business, and we're in her top three. We're in Barbara's top three of her most successful businesses.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me, I read somewhere that she actually made her investment back in 3 weeks.
Well, it was a tad bit longer than that. Sometimes things get, I think, misprinted or misspoken, but within the first year she had her money back. And since then, yeah, she's 25% owner of Daisy Cakes, and I mm-hmm. do everything. I keep that in mind in every decision that we make around here, and you know that it's her money made this happen, and Shark Tank made this happen. And I had dinner just the other night out in L.A. with Mindy, the casting director, who picked me to be on the show. And it's so nice to, you know, just to have that excitement and, you know, reconnect with her because I haven't seen her, you know, since I was out there and doing the show. And it's just so fun, the friends you make and the people who we all have this, you know, we're in this small little club of, you know, the Shark Tank group of people. And it's amazing, and it's an honor and a privilege to, you know, be a part of it.
So what would be some of the tips that you've learned with Barbara that could help other entrepreneurs who may be listening on the phone?
I think one of the phrases that we both share, Barbara and I, is jump first and then ask questions later. And, you know, for me, I am a risk taker. Unfortunately, my children are too, I think. When I say unfortunately, I mean for safety purposes sometimes too when it comes to sports and things. But, you know, I knew early on that I didn't want to look back and have regrets about not doing things, whether it was going on a trip or worrying about whether I had quite enough money to take, you know, let's go on that Disney World vacation or whatever. I really do like to jump first, and then I try to figure out things later. And I don't think you should pass up any opportunity that or any door that opens that looks like it might be an opportunity. I'm going to look behind there and see what it is and explore it and try to make it work for me. And I don't want to have regrets. And if somebody thinks they have an idea or something that's good for you know, Shark Tank, or just even opening their own business, it doesn't have to be for something on Shark Tank. I think you should do everything in your power to make it happen. If it's something, you know, that you really want, that you feel in your gut, it's something that you really want, and you don't want to, you know, live with regret of not trying that out. And that's not a good feeling. That's not a good feeling at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard you say a couple of things. One of them, I mean, I think you've given us some really nuggets here. One of them, nothing is ever easy. It takes a lot of work. You need to be persistent. That no one can run your business better than you can, which I think is really important. You said no regrets. You said jump first, ask questions later. So in other words, be willing to take those risks. But I think I'm hearing you also say make sure that they're calculated risks.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, but I think it has to be something, you know, I wouldn't start an accounting firm or anything to do with money like that, because I'm not good at that. That my mother's good at that. I'm the creative mind in the business, and so I don't have that precision of order that you would come with any of those numerical people. But, you know, I know, and I knew early on, that my God-given talent is cooking. Baking, cooking dinner, all to do with food is what I love. And my second thing is I love working in the yard and digging in the dirt and that kind of thing, too. But, you know, so if it's something that you feel like, and I think a lot of us know what we love to do, because if it's something that you love to do and doesn't really seem like work, then that's what you should pursue and try to, you know, figure out a way, if that's what you want to do, how to make a living at it. And I think if that was the case, the world would be a lot happier place for a lot of people that, you know, you don't want to dread going to work every day. I'm sure you love what you do, and you get to enjoy, you know, the part of your life that is fulfilling, which is interviewing people. For me, it's cooking. And, you know, I just think that's a very fulfilling way to go through life. And I don't mean that we all have to be multimillionaires like Barbara. That's not going to happen to all of us. But if we can make a living at it and, you know, go on a vacation with our families, then I think that's what's important to me.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, do what you love to do. But, you know, we need to take a quick break here, and I want to circle back on this when we come back. This is Deanne DeMarco with Today's Inspiring Women, and we're speaking to the Daisy Cake Lady, Kim Nelson. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
One of the biggest challenges facing corporate America today is accountability. Lack of accountability results for more than 50% of all business failure. Lack of responsibility, strategy, and follow-up are just some of the culprits that kill accountability. Deanne DeMarco knows firsthand how to drive accountability in your business or organization. Deanne DeMarco is one of the most sought-after advisors and coaches in corporate America. Companies that use Deanne as their company coach often call her their chief accountability officer. Your company or business will grow with Deanne as your CAO. Call 866-91-COACH or email Deanne at DeanneDeMarco.com for more information.
My name's Ken, and I am as general a contractor as you'll find. I do
kitchen remodeling, additions, plumbing, painting. Ken does it all. And I'm Mandy,
the owner of the UPS store in my neighborhood. And Mandy here does it all, too. She
handles Ken's packing and shipping. Because when you're remodeling a bathroom and a client
changes their mind on a light fixture or a mirror, Mandy packs it up and ships it out. She also
helps Ken promote his business, like with these new brochures we printed, new business cards.
And the flyers are great, too. In fact, when I'm at a job and I'm expecting a delivery,
I sign for it. I even let him know with a text or email.
Since I got a mailbox at the UPS store. I have to say, as much as I love being on my own, I'm not alone. I've got Mandy here.
To help with the heavy lifting?
Well, figuratively speaking.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at DeanneDeMarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women, and we are speaking to Daisy Cakes owner, Kim Nelson. And Kim was on the Shark Tank. You know, so Kim, one of the things that I think it might be important for people to understand is that just because you get on the Shark Tank, everything isn't going to be perfect from that point forward. Were there any setbacks even when working with Barb?
Oh, goodness. I'll tell you. You know, we were so happy when that first, you know, my pitch aired. And, you know, we got all these orders, a little over 2,000 orders in the 48 hours following that airing. And we'd only sold 2,000 cakes the whole 2010, the year prior. But, you know, you're so happy, so you just want to find... we knew we couldn't bake that many cakes here for the demand, so we found a large production bakery down in Georgia, and that worked for a few months, and then that didn't work. So then we moved to a bakery in the Bronx for a while that Barbara and her team found for us. That worked for a while, then that didn't work. And then we moved to another bakery in Tennessee, same thing. Worked for a while, then it didn't work anymore. And that's what it goes back to. You know, nobody's going to run your business or nobody's going to bake my cakes the way my mother and I are going to bake them. And so it was just, you know, three times we tried it. And, you know, my mother was saying, Kim, we got to bring the cakes here. We've got to make them. And if we can't produce them all at once, we'll just ask people to kindly please wait or order way ahead of time. So, and then it wasn't 2 weeks, literally. It wasn't even 2 weeks after my mother said that Barbara said, Kim, forget this. Cut your losses. Go back to Pauline, South Carolina, where you know every cake you bake is the right way, your mom and your way. And so that's what we did. And that was, it's been a little over a year ago that we brought all the baking back here. And that was certainly the answer. And believe it or not, we even have people who were kind enough. We could not fill all the orders in for Mother's Day, and people sent their mother's cakes the next week, you know, with a note, you know, happy late Mother's Day, because they wanted their mothers to have a daisy cake. And, we'd let people know we couldn't ship it, and they were like, oh, that's okay, we'll just ship it next week. People are willing to wait because they are good, they're quality cakes, and, you know, there's no preservatives, no weird stuff in them. It's all the real baking ingredients that you would use. And so people are willing to wait. But that was our problem was, Deanne, too big, too fast. And that just didn't work for us for baking. And so we brought it all home, and it was the right decision. It was a bitter pill to swallow for a while, but we turned the corner at Thanksgiving, and it's okay now.
So what happened when you took your cakes business to these other locations? Did the quality go down? Is that what happened?
That is exactly what happened. So I was, you know, I would spend 3 or 4 weeks at each place. We have the cakes. They would be fabulous. They would be perfect. They would be beautiful. And then for a while after I left, you know, a few weeks later, they would still be that way. Then, you know, the people in charge of the bakeries had more business than just mine. So, you know, they weren't able to keep their eye on everything the way they, you know, you would want them to be able to, because they had other businesses to bake for. And because we don't use cake mix, ours is flour and baking powder, baking soda, salt. So, you know, it wasn't dumping a 50-pound bag of a cake mix into a thing with some oil and eggs and water. It was, you know, buttermilk and butter and whipping cream and what all we use. So, you know, it was a little bit different formula for them that they might have been used to. And, you know, once you're not there keeping your eye on it, it didn't work. And I couldn't stay down in Georgia. I couldn't stay in New York or Nashville. I couldn't stay in those places. So, you know, you leave and then things go south, and then you just have to, you know, move on. And that was the problem. And, you know, I was on QVC, and that was such a thrill to get to do that, but it did not work for our business model to have cakes on QVC, because it's just, you know, it's just they're expensive, they're time consuming, they're labor intensive, and you know, they have expensive ingredients in them, so that wasn't a good match for us either.
So it's really about, you know, paying attention to your business, where you're really going to find your market. And just because, you know, QVC is there doesn't mean that that's the answer to your particular situation.
Oh, absolutely not. And I had said on my original pitch that I wanted to be on one of the, you know, home shopping networks. And, you know, Kevin O'Leary said, well, what are you going to do? You know, kill your mother trying to make all the cakes? And, you know, he's basically right. That was, you know, for a product that's made in a manufacturing facility, you know, or like the Reader-esque guy or something, I mean, that's fine. But for what we do and the quality that we expect and that my customers expect, it's just, you know, that wasn't a fit. And live and learn, right? I mean, you know we don't want to do that anymore. That's a lesson we learned. We don't need to do that. Or some things work, some things don't. And, you know, that's been a learning experience, too, over the last few years, figuring all that out.
So what I think I'm hearing you also say that, you know, even though you have this wonderful mentor, I mean, there's still going to be some issues, and you just need to have to work through it step by step.
Yes, and Barbara is not a control freak. I mean, she certainly gives us great advice, all of her entrepreneurs, and she's, you know, there to help us. But, you know, the day-to-day runnings of the business are our responsibility, and she'll certainly help any way she can, but she's not... You know, she's just not, she's one person. She doesn't sleep much anyway because she doesn't require a lot of sleep, but she can't, you know, mind all of us, you know, every day.
Sure.
But she's, you know, there if we need her. She certainly, you know, will answer an email or a text or a phone call if we, you know, are in dire need of her help.
You know, so looking back, is there anything that you would do differently if you had to do this all over again?
Yes, I would. I made a really poor hiring decision back in January of 2012, and I brought some family in to help with financial management, and that was a huge mistake. And that other than that, through my whole life, I wouldn't change a thing because it's got me to this point. And even that got me to this point of, you know, this is, you know, things are very good business wise. But, you know, it's just there again, you know, you're just constantly learning. And some days I'll just say, oh, I'm so sick of learning. I don't want to learn anymore. I don't want to learn another lesson. Please, I've learned enough. But, you know, you just, you do. And then that all goes back to that I don't mind hard work. My mother is 80 years old. She's out here right now. I mean, she works every day. She's bored on the weekends, she says, because nobody's here during, you know, this time of year. But you just have to learn that nobody is going to run your business like you're going to run your business. Nobody cares about your business the way you do. And that is my biggest lesson that I've learned. And that was the one mistake I've made, was, you know, putting trust in someone that just is, it was the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only regret. That is my only regret.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think it is hard to, you know, that whole hiring thing is a difficult thing. It's, you know, making sure that you got the right fit and the right person, and people interview one way and their work ethic may be totally different 30 days later.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and it's not just as an entrepreneur, it's in business too. You know, even if you're in a big company, you know, you're hoping you're making that right decision. It's really, really hard. So some of the lessons I think that you're telling our entrepreneurs out there is just really having a passion for what it is you're doing. I mean, I love to cook, but I'm not sure I would want to do that every day in my life.
And you know what? Even when we go on vacation, I like a place with a kitchen, because I like to, first of all, I like to have breakfast in the morning. I like to cook breakfast in my pajamas with my coffee and not rush around, check emails and all that. And then also, depending on where we go, if we go down to the Keys, like to fish or whatever, then I want to be able to cook supper. I want to be able to cook whatever it is we caught that day. And So even on vacation, that's what I like to do. I like to cook.
You love to cook.
I do.
So tell us how people can get hold of your Daisy Cakes. And
yes, they can check out our website. It's ilovedaisycakes.com. And then we also have a toll-free number. It's 877-316-CAKE. That's 877-316-2253. And ilovedaisycakes.com has all the pictures of the cakes, our cake of the month that we do, that's part of what the Price is Right contract is, and that's how we started that. And we also every now and then will throw out some pies, or right now we're doing some great biscuits for and some daisies jam for 4th of July picnics. So, we, uh-huh. You know, we add a different little spice or every now and then too. So it's always good to check back and see what's coming up.
Cool. And that is at 1-877-316-CAKE, CAKE, or 2253.
Right. That's us.
Cool. That's I Love Daisy Cakes. Now you have a cookbook coming out too, right?
I do. It's really, really, the photography is amazing. Every recipe has a picture. It's 25 cakes, about 8 or 10 pies, and some cookies, and lots of stories about cooking with my grandmothers, lots of pictures, old pictures of us way back in the day. And it's a hard copy. It'll be $29.95. It's about 130 pages, I think. And Barbara wrote the foreword for me, and I've got some good quotes on the back from some famous people, too, which is kind of nice that people are so kind and supportive. So it should be out end of July, 1st of August.
Wonderful. And they can find out about that book on your website as well?
Yes, it is. And it's a link to the publisher. He'll be sending everything out for me.
Well, that'll be wonderful.
Thank
so
you,
I love Daisy Cakes.
I love Daisy Cakes, too, and I love Shark Tank.
So if people want a Daisy Cake, go to – although the way I found you is I just Googled Daisy Cakes, and I was able to find you real easy.
Yeah, we're the first one on that page, I think.
Yeah, you are. You are. So that worked out really, really well as well. So be looking at getting a daisy cake at I Love Daisy Cakes. Well, Kim, our time is up here, and I'd like to thank you very much for being on today's Inspiring Women.
Awesome. Thank you, Deanne, for having me. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, if anybody has questions, we have an inquiry page on our email. I'm happy to answer those. And people send messages on Facebook and things like that. I'm always happy to answer questions that people might have. So feel free to, you know, drop us an email, and I'll be happy to answer it for you.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you again very much. We need to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the authentic way of self-promotion. Stay tuned. This is Deanne DeMarco, today's Inspiring Women.
Become a sponsor and position your company to the fastest growing market segment, the women's business market. Your organization has the opportunity to be positioned front and center to the women's business market by becoming a sponsor of today's Inspiring Women with host Deanne DeMarco. The show is broadcast weekly and features guests who are prominent and successful women business owners and influential executives. Businesses that fail to recognize the power of the woman buyer are leaving money on the table. Increase your market share to the fastest growing market segment by becoming a sponsor for today's Inspiring Women. Call 708-836-0118 for more information or email Deanne directly at info@deannedemarco.com.
My name's Ken, and I am as general a contractor as you'll find. I do
kitchen remodeling, additions, plumbing, painting. Ken does it all. And I'm Mandy,
the owner of the UPS store in my neighborhood. And Mandy here does it all, too. She
handles Ken's packing and shipping. Because when you're remodeling a bathroom and a client
changes their mind on a light fixture or a mirror, Mandy packs it up and ships it out. She also
helps Ken promote his business, like with these new brochures we printed, new business cards.
And the flyers are great, too. In fact, when I'm at a job and I'm expecting a delivery,
I sign for it. I even let him know with a text or email.
Since I got a mailbox at the UPS store. I have to say, as much as I love being on my own, I'm not alone. I've got Mandy here.
To help with the heavy lifting?
Well, figuratively speaking.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at deannedemarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women, and we have got a wonderful another guest for you on the line. And her name is Nancy Joyce. And Nancy is a business executive, internet entrepreneur, and expert in teaching women the art of self-promotion. Nancy's coaching and training courses on authentic self-promotion for women are a first to focus directly on this career-defining skill. Through her consulting firm, Joyce Advisors, she directly work with Nancy to lead discussions and strategic initiatives for gifts, groups, and all sorts of different areas. She's worked with Apple Computer, DoubleClick, which is now Google, a number of different startups. And Nancy sits on the board of YouBeauty.com, a startup founded by Dr. Melman Oz, and she's a graduate of Georgetown University in the Kellogg School, Graduate School of Management. Nancy, welcome, and you speak six languages too. Wow. Nancy, welcome to Today's Inspiring Women.
Thank you so much, Tiana. It's great to be here.
Well, so you worked with DoubleClick, which is now Google,
mm-hmm.
and Apple. Wow.
Yes.
That is
something
else.
Fun.
and Dr. Oz. I didn't know his first name.
Yes, Nemeth.
So tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, how did you get started into this whole self-promotion stuff?
Well, interesting. I don't have the typical background for somebody involved in training and coaching. My background is really general business. So I'm a business person. I focused on technology and internet most of my career and general management. So I ran business divisions for Apple Computer. I launched their education, sales, and marketing division in Eastern Europe and opened the Moscow office for them. I ran some email marketing businesses for DoubleClick, which was acquired by Google a few years ago, and Guild Group, which is I'm not even sure you can call it a startup anymore, but a big online off-price retailer / sales site based in New York. I did a lot of consulting for them and was really focused on the internet e-commerce space, but my entire life was really focused on helping women get to the next level, women that I coached, women on my team, women that I hired in Moscow I still talk to on a regular basis about their careers. And I decided at a certain point in my life that I heard Kim refer to her God-given talent, although I can't say it was her genius accent, one of my God-given talents is to help women realize their potential, but also how to express it in such a way that people recognize it and that they can get to the next level. So I was able to do that at DoubleClick and had a very powerful sponsor and the CEO there who, to this day, helps me in all of my business endeavors. And so I decided that, my goal in life for the next foreseeable future anyway was to help other women do the same.
So when you talk about self-promotion, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I talk to women about self-promotion, most of the time they make a face or they stick their tongue out and roll their eyes. And when I talk about self-promotion, I don't mean bragging. I don't mean spitting up your resume to the person next to you on the airplane. What I mean when I talk about self-promotion is really educating relevant people about your skills and the value that you bring to the organization that you're serving at the time.
So how do you really do that without bragging?
It's a great, great question. Well, interestingly, as I was listening you talk to Kim, she's pretty good at it. So there's a couple ways that you do it. And for people who are really concerned about it, the first thing you have to do is start with something you're passionate about. So, and that's one of the reasons that Kim was good at it, is because, as she said, she said, people should work on things they're passionate about. Well, there is nothing like some good old-fashioned enthusiasm to allow you to self-promote without sounding like you're bragging, because what people hear is enthusiasm and passion. And so what I tell people when they don't know where to start is, number one, start at the intersection of what you're passionate about at work. What's the one thing that you would tell people outside work about work unprompted? And then if you had to take that thing and dovetail it with what are the priorities that have been given to you at work, and then what do you know about your manager's priorities? If you could put those three things together and pick out a couple of different topics that are at the intersection of those three things, that is the place to start.
Hmm.
And then how can you take those topics and pull from there stories that have facts in them or stories that are deep dives into the business that you can tell your manager about that will really get them excited about what you're achieving? So, I say aggregate facts. So, for example, if my topic that I want to talk about is sales calls that I'm involved in, and I say, I'm just starting out here, so I don't have many sales yet, but I want my boss to know that I'm on it. I might say, I'm really excited because this week I was able to double the number of sales calls that I made. So here you are talking about your activity. You're also saying you're really excited, so you're showing your passion for the work, and you're quantifying the activity.
Huh. Facts and quantify. In your, but you're also, so you're, it's passion, but you're also using either a micro story or like in our first guest case, a longer story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. I mean, the other thing is to do a deep, what I call a deep dive. So, for example, if you're in you know, product management or product development, you know, one of the interesting things you can do is actually have a detailed conversation with a customer and come back to your manager and say, you know, I spent a lot of time on the phone with so-and-so big profile customer, and these are the three important things that I learned. Boom, boom, boom. And what I'm really excited about is that this third thing is really going to help us define how we move forward with this new product feature. So by the way, you're not saying I rock, right? But what you're saying is what I have achieved is I have achieved moving this piece of the business forward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how I've done it. And these are the results that we're going to see as a result. And men do this very naturally and very often.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, interestingly, Catalyst, which is this research organization in New York that studies women in business, they did an 8-year study of 3,000 MBA graduates from the best schools on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they asked these people came from the best banks, the best marketing, CPG companies, you name it, and they went back to those great organizations. And they also said, we're going to keep this sample very clean. And what I mean by that is we want to see if you're if you are statistically the same except for gender, we want to see where you end up if we track you for 8 years or so. And so we don't want anybody to be able to say, well, you know, at the end of 8 years, women are making less because they took time off for childcare. So if you take time off for childcare, for example, we're going to drop you from the sample. So these people are statistically equal with the exception of gender. And they tracked these people for 8 years, and they asked them to self-report against certain behaviors that high-performing employees do on a regular basis. So things like making sure you get the right training, blurring the line between home life and work life, being willing to travel to high-potential markets, all those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the 8 years, the men on average were making about $32,000 more than the women.
Wow.
And they were also at least one level, and sometimes two, depending on industry, more senior than the women. And when they ran the regression against the self-reported data, what they found was that the women who got close to the men in terms of compensation, there was only one behavior that made any difference at all. And guess what it was?
The self-promotion piece?
Talking about your achievements at work.
Wow.
And for the women who got close to the men in terms of seniority, there were only two pieces. One was talking about your achievements at work again. And the second piece was networking with powerful others within your organization. So those are two critical elements of self-promotion, not just talking about your achievements at work, but also networking with powerful others. And obviously when you do that, you need to tell them about your achievements at work.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So where do people get stuck? I mean, particularly women, where do they get stuck in doing self-promotion properly?
Right. There are a couple places that people get stuck. The first is, you know, obviously they don't do it at all. The second is that they don't know where to start. And so that's really, you know, where training comes in. And then I think, you know, the third is that they don't feel like themselves when they do it. And that's why I talk about authentic self-promotion, and that's why it's important to start about something you're passionate about. But there's a fourth piece, and this fourth piece is that pit in their stomach or their chest that we all get when we're pushing the envelope of something that just doesn't feel right to us and we're not sure why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have come to believe working in this space that, you know, we as women have been culturally trained not to talk about our achievements and not really to stand out. And it turns out that there's research that backs that up, that And even Sheryl Sandberg talked in her book Lean In about the fact that, you know, we love successful men. We're not so sure we like successful women too much. You know, women draw attention to themselves and their achievements. And, you know, it's called the double bind. Or women who are too assertive have the same problem. You know, so your choice is you're not assertive, but then you're, you know, not viewed as a leader. You don't get what you want. Or you're not. You're very assertive, but you're viewed as difficult to work with, not a team player, or something even worse, which we don't say on the radio. And but there are several professors at Harvard and Carnegie Mellon who studied this issue, and one of the things they found that works in negotiation for women that also works in self-promotion is that if you harness this role, cultural role that we see for women of being, you know, the harbingers of the community, into your strategy for self-promotion and for negotiation, and you add on at the end of your phrase the benefit of what you did to the community, to the client, to the team, to the customer, then actually neutralizes any backlash. So if I just say to you, I think I did a really great job in that presentation. I'm really happy with how it went. There's a little bit of resentment from, you know, a little bit of backlash from some people in the room. Not just men, too. Women have the exact same reaction. Like, who does she think she is?
Okay.
Walking in saying, you know, I think I did a great job. Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, when a guy does that, he gets no backlash. But if I walk in the room and I say, you know what? I think I did a really good job in that presentation. I'm really happy how it went. And on top of that, I really think I made my direct client at the client look really good in front of his boss. And that made me feel great. That neutralizes that potential for looking like I'm not a team player, and really changes the way people measurably changes the way people think about you. And so I always train people when they do their self-promotion to actually tack on at the end any sort of benefit they saw to the team, to the client, to the community, to the corporation, so that it neutralizes that. Now, of course, you know, I and you and everybody wishes that this were not the case and we could just be ourselves and, you know, say what we wanted and there'd be no repercussion, but there is. And I promised myself when I went into this business that I would be honest about that. And so I share that with people and I say, so if you, you know, if you want to avoid that, this is the way you do that.
So you tack on some sort of benefit to another person or to the team or to someone other.
Exactly.
That's very, very interesting. I did not realize that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we need to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about how we dive into this whole self-promotion piece a little bit more. This is Deanne DeMarco, today's Inspiring Women. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My name's Ken, and I am as general a contractor as you'll find. I do
kitchen remodeling, additions, plumbing, painting. Ken does it all. And I'm Mandy,
the owner of the UPS store in my neighborhood. And Mandy here does it all, too. She
handles Ken's packing and shipping. Because when you're remodeling a bathroom and a client
changes their mind on a light fixture or a mirror, Mandy packs it up and ships it out. She also
helps Ken promote his business, like with these new brochures we printed, new business cards.
And the flyers are great, too. In fact, when I'm at a job and I'm expecting a delivery,
I sign for it. I even let him know with a text or email.
Since I got a mailbox at the UPS store. I have to say, as much as I love being on my own, I'm not alone. I've got Mandy here.
To help with the heavy lifting?
Well, figuratively speaking.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
You
are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at deannedemarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women. And we have got Nancy Joyce on the line, and she is an expert in the area of authentic self-promotion, particularly for women. You know, and Nancy, as you were talking, I was just wondering if you have any specific recommendations for women in particular on what they should really implement if they could starting tomorrow.
Well, I would say if you take nothing else away from today, it would be to really make sure that your manager knows what your successes are on a regular basis. And one of the things that we find when we go into companies and we survey self-promotion behaviors of the men and the women is that the men meet with their managers both formally and informally significantly more often. So the guys might meet with their managers between 12 and 15% more often on a formal basis, and about 20% to 25% more often on an informal basis. And not only that, when you ask men and women in these organizations, how often do you go into a meeting with your boss with the intent to share your accomplishments, the percentage of men that say sometimes or more often than sometimes is always about 25% to 30% higher than women. And so when you think about why it is that there are more men in management, obviously that's a complex issue, but I truly believe that one of the reasons is not only, obviously, does like attract like, as we know, and so, you know, men sponsor other men. There's been a lot of talk about that, but part of the manifestation of that is that men are actually spending more time with each other. And so whether a guy stops by, you know, his boss's office and says, hey, how was your daughter's lacrosse game, or did you see the Bruins game last night, or did you see the NBA finals last night? But that conversation changes into, oh, by the way, I'm about to finish that contract. Would you like to take a look at it before I send it out? Then they get together and they look at the contract, and the boss's boss stops by, and there's a networking opportunity. And men do that so much more often that over time really adds up to an advantage in terms of trust between the manager and the employee, in terms of getting to know each other. And then when we ask women, if your boss was asked by his or her boss what's going on in the department, women are just as likely to think they'll be mentioned as men are. And I usually say to them, you know, I think you're off base here because you're not meeting with the boss as often. And when you go, you don't actually go with the intent to share your accomplishments. So if off the top of his or her head, the boss is asked by his or her boss to say, you know, give me the good news from your team this week, you may not be at the top of that list. So if you do nothing else, make sure you're meeting as often as possible, and don't be afraid to stop by and make sure you have the intent to share some good news, some successes when you do that.
Wow. You know, I think that informal statistic is a really important one. Men meet 20 to 25% informally more than women do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can see where that would really lead into another discussion on a project or a paper or whatever. And so they are going to be more at top of mind.
Absolutely.
Than someone who doesn't speak to them very often.
Right.
Wow. And I didn't realize the formal piece as well.
Yeah. And it leads to this perception that they're doing more, when in fact they may not be. They just are talking more about it.
Hmm. Well, that is really important, that they are, the perception is that they're doing more, and life is perceptions.
Yeah.
Wow. So one of the things I want to talk about real quickly here before our time is up is to talk about showing leadership in meetings.
Mm-hmm.
What would you be some suggestions in that arena?
Yeah, showing leadership in meetings is a really important topic. Some research came out recently in the American Political Science Review that had some really revealing and startling statistics saying that women basically only speak 3/4 of the time that men do in meetings when they're outnumbered. And particularly when they're solving a problem. And basically what that means is that, you know, this whole diversity push, meaning that you get all these different points of view in a meeting, you know, it isn't happening if women are outnumbered by men because they're speaking significantly less. Number one, women need to be aware of that and think about why they're checking themselves. But there are a few other things that are important to think about. First of all, the team that coaches for the gentleman who wrote, I think John Gray, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Uh-huh. They have a statistic that's fascinating to me, that in their research, that when a man waits a third of a second when someone finishes speaking in order to start speaking, a woman will wait between 1 and 2 full seconds after someone else finishes speaking to start speaking.
And so interesting.
So if a man and a woman are next to each other in a meeting, both with something to say, the woman's going to lose out.
Right.
And then by the time she gets the floor back, her point could be irrelevant. So my best friend, I'm joking, I wish, but Madeleine Albright, said once that if she could have women learn one skill, it would be to learn to interrupt. And I really do believe that this is something that women need to learn how to do comfortably. We are too polite in meetings. Mm-hmm. We need to learn that our ideas are more important than our perceived politeness.
Well, that is very, very interesting. You know, so Joyce, tell us, what are some of the services that you provide that you can provide for our listeners, and how do they get hold of you?
Right. So I have a website. It's www.joyceadvisors.com. And I serve both companies and businesses. And for companies, I provide training services for women in the art of authentic self-promotion. And I include in there a complimentary piece for management of those people in the training, so that managers are aware that they're only hearing part of the story, that they can keep track of who they're meeting with more often than others, which really creates this culture of self-promotion and really starts to change culture for the better. So management has insight into who's doing the work versus who's talking about it, and allows the women also to begin really getting their own voice out there, owning their authentic voice in the workplace, both in the meetings, and then also with their boss to own their achievements, so that that contributes to their ability to rise to the executive suite within that organization. So there's training services there, there's speaking services around that, and then coaching services. And then for individuals, I offer webinars. There's a webinar that actually starts next week that people can sign up for on my website, and individual coaching services.
Well, I'll tell you, I think women will sign up for that webinar next week.
I hope so.
So that's, and you're going to be talking about exactly what you're talking about here on how to be more authentic in your self-promotion, that webinar?
Exactly. So, you know, really how to build your self-promotion story, figuring out what it is for you in particular. What's that intersection between your priorities, your passions, and your manager's priorities? What is it? What are the stories that you can build? How often you should be talking about it? To whom? And then what is your persona when you're in a meeting? How often do you talk? What do you talk about? Where do you get stuck? And then networking, diagnosing your networks. The other interesting thing we haven't talked about is women's networks. And people find that even women who are excellent networkers, their networks aren't as powerful as men's networks because there's so many more men in positions of power. But even if a guy has a smaller network, his network is typically more powerful. And so we need to include more powerful people in our networks. And so we go through networks to examine those as well.
Okay, and they can find that at www.joyceadvisors.com.
They can.
J-O-Y-C-E.
You got it.
All right. Well, Nancy, I'd like to thank you very much for being on today's Inspiring Women. We've learned a lot. I'm going to have you come back. I mean, you've got some great, great information here. But thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate being on the show.
Well, we need to sign off here. This is to Deanne DeMarco, today's Inspiring Women. I'd like to leave you with a quick quote as we're signing off here. And it's, the author is unknown, but the quote is, there aren't any rules to success that will work unless you do. And your action for this week is to put a little extra effort in an area where you would like to enjoy more success. Until next time, this is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women. Have an extraordinary week.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Today's Inspiring Women. Please join host Deanne DeMarco and other entrepreneurial and business leaders next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Have an outstanding week.